Welcome film industry professionals, film buffs, and aspiring filmmakers. This is the Cinema Pathway Podcast presented by Paradoxical Films, and I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. Guys, join us on a journey behind the camera, and most importantly, beyond what we know about cinema and the craft of filmmaking. So, sit down, grab your popcorn, drink your soda, and let's ride the cinema road together with Cinema Pathway. Welcome to all listeners across the world to your new film family, Cinema Pathway Podcast, with your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. This podcast is for film buffs, film lovers, film critics, people who make films, people who watch films, and people who just like to talk film. You have found your new family. Now, have you ever wondered who are the true master hands of script supervising? Before you hear a line, see a movement, or even move through the vast number of contemplated opinions for every sense you receive on screen, the story is first passed through the fingers of what I call the master hand of the script. And that honor is given to the script supervisor. Never realized script supervisors had that much power, neither did I, until I met Emily Pendas. Like Geppetto is to Pinocchio, so are script supervisors to the script and story. They make them into real boys. Behind the scenes, there is no such thing as a minor detail. Script supervisors are responsible for catching everyone. They meticulously track what happens to the actors, what happens in each scene, and constantly cross-reference to make sure everything matches, i.e., they cannot miss a beat. Script supervisors must even dictate the notes of the director on set while making it all make sense to the talent, the crew, the original creator of the work, and essentially everyone around you. Script supervisors have the film on paper before it ever graces the screen. It is my honor to present to you one of the unsung heroes and the behind-the-scenes master of script supervising, Miss Emily Pendas. Welcome to the podcast. Are you blushing yet?
Thank you. Thank you.
I'm bestowing a queen to the to the studio. Queen Emily Pendas.
Oh my God, please.
Now, what was the moment you realized that you wanted to do this professionally? You realized I could be an awesome script supervisor.
That's a great question, because actually I, like so many people, even people on set, who have no idea what a script supervisor was initially. I went to school at UM and I studied film. I went and did the directing track. I wanted to be a director.
Ooh, okay.
I did the directing for film and directing for theater. And I did a few one-act plays. I directed a few one-act plays. And then I shot my own short films. And with that experience, I tried to go out into the world.
Yeah. Where were you when I needed a job?
I needed a job. I was working with, after I graduated from UM, a professor of mine decided to take a break, and he wanted to do his own film. And he asked me if I would help him. And I said, sure, whatever. I wasn't getting paid or anything. I was just helping him organize his thoughts or whatever. And then in the meantime, I had sent out my resume because I had some stuff to put on there. I had done my one acts. I had done my shorts. I had worked at interned in a couple of places. And then I had also worked as assistant accountant for a commercial production company.
When did you sleep?
and I waited tables while I was at UM. So I would sleep in the film shack and I would come home and my cat would look at me like, where have you been?
Working.
So I had a few things to put on my resume, and I sent out my resume to every single producer that I saw in the production guide, and only one person answered my letter.
Wait a minute. every single producer?
Every
single. How many were there? Like, this just about?
Probably 100. I don't know. This was a while back.
You sent it out to 100 people?
I can't tell you the exact number, but there was a lot. There was a lot.
Wow.
So I went to school also for a summer abroad program in Prague. I mentioned that because I really think that the one producer that reached out to me, Andre Zinka, thank you very much, Andre. He is Romanian. And I think maybe the Prague thing kind of stood out for him. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
He called me up and asked me if I wanted to be a script supervisor. And I said, yes, sure. Why not?
Now, did you know what that was before? No idea.
Had absolutely no idea because we didn't study that in school.
Hey, sometimes you have to fake it to make it, right?
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Listen, listeners, sometimes you have to fake it to make it. And she sent it to over maybe, what, roughly 80 to 100
50,
people.
100,
but see, that's the kind of tenacity you have to make it in this business.
Yeah. Thick skin and tenacity. Yeah.
So what happened when he hired you? You got the job?
Well, no, he called me in for an interview.
Ooh, what was that like?
He called me in for an interview. It was a big studio in Hialeah. I went to his office and he made me wait in the lobby for like a half an hour. And then finally he called me in. You know, we went through our niceties and then he asked me to describe the room.
Describe the room.
And because later when I found out, script supervising is all about the details. And he was testing me on my observational skills.
Wow, okay.
I told him what color socks the receptionist was wearing.
Wait a minute. I'll be honest with you. When I go for an audition or an interview, I mean, I pay attention to the boss. I pay attention to the people around me. But I would never have figured the color of the socks of the receptionist.
Yeah.
Wow. You really do pay attention to details.
We argued about the color of the couch, and I was right.
What was the color of the couch?
Oh, I think it was like orange and yellow with yellow flowers or something like that. Yeah.
And because he realized how incredibly like inept you were to paying attention to details, you got the job.
Well, I think he realized that I had good observation and that it could work. So he hired me. Still didn't know what the position was. So I shadowed Linda Manis, who was kind of my mentor then. We had two units. We had a studio unit and a location unit. And so he was hiring someone for the location. So I sat with the studio script supervisor for 3 days. And then I read a couple of books.
On script supervising.
On script supervising. Okay. Pat Miller, yes. And after that, I just kind of dove in. Just been treading water ever since.
So, like, in your opinion, seriously, what does a script supervisor do? The responsibilities of a script supervisor, so people know this is what they do exactly.
So, script supervisor, not just observational details, because there's a lot of paperwork involved. I was fortunately, I was able to lean on my studies because I did study, like I said, the directing track, and I was able to use my editing with the knowledge of how to look for screen direction, eye lines, and things like that.
Okay.
And then from breaking down scripts for theater, knowing where to put people and where to focus and just knowing how to write stuff down on the script, it helped me. So those things really helped me. But once I had no idea what to do on set because I was totally green, but I was able to use the background from school and then following Linda around and seeing her paperwork and then reading those books, I could incorporate all those things together and start finding my way of how to do it. Because the job is getting around to it.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
The job is you are basically the editor's person on set. Okay. You're taking all the notes from the director for each take of each scene. Camera rolls, sound rolls, all the information, what the shot is, which take they like, and you send that information along with other notes to the editors so that when they get the footage of the day, they can find what shot the director liked for which scene, what camera roll, what sound roll. They can put all the little pieces of the puzzle together and then put the scene together and then put the film, show, commercial, whatever it is, format you're working on. And they can put it all together.
Wow.
So script supervising is a lot of paperwork, a lot of observations, also continuity.
Ooh, talk about it. What is continuity?
Continuity is making sure that all of the things are where they're supposed to be. Mm. It's, you know, making sure that if an actor walks in from outside to inside, that they have their purse on the correct shoulder, they're wearing the correct outfit. Because you might shoot the exterior one day, and then 2 weeks later, you shoot the interior, and it all has to match.
And if it doesn't match, it can, like, ruin the movie. I mean, think about it, right?
It won't ruin the movie, but it'll definitely take you out of the film. It'll be like, wait, yeah, what just happened?
Yeah, like the believability of the movie.
Yes, yes. That will be lost.
Because, you know, when you watch films, obviously you want to be like immersed in that world.
Yes.
Do you ever feel pressured about that? Like, oh my goodness, I forgot that this actor had glasses on the night before, or the day before we did the shoot, and now they don't. Oh my goodness, I messed that up. Or do you ever feel that kind of pressure?
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, that is a stressful situation. Thankfully, we have other departments. So you, as a script supervisor, you work with a lot of different departments. Yeah. Continuity wise, you work with props, art department, you work with wardrobe, you work with makeup, you work with hair, all these different departments. Now they have their own breakdowns. I do breakdowns for the whole film, television show, et cetera, et cetera. So mine is more general, and I have like specific notes for things, you know, bruises or whatever. But then I'll talk to makeup department. If someone has a bruise, they got into a fight, they have a bruise or they have blood, and we'll talk about how long does it last? You know, where did they get hit? Because sometimes they have information that I don't, and vice versa. So I will work with the different departments to make sure that we are all on the same page, because that's what it boils down to.
What department do you like work the closely with, like the closest with, like the AD or the
camera? I work with camera a lot. Camera and sound. They will become your best buds because we all have to exactly be on the same page and make sure that the slates are right. And so everyone has the slate number, the scene number, the take number, and we're all matching. And so I am usually the one that gives the slate numbers to the camera department, to the second AC. So the second AC and I become good friends. Mm. We're buddies because we're always giving each other information, lens information, because I write that down in my notes and I send it to the editor with that shot, that take, you know, in case if we change things up, I give them a different slate number, scene number, shot number. And sound as well, because we all have to be on the same page.
It's all right. That's the passion. The passion that's just I know, flowing I talk through with my your hands. Veins. It's all right. We're Latino. It's all right. Be yourself.
Yes. So I mostly work with camera and sound. I work with the other departments, of course, through continuity wise and stuff. And we always make sure that, you know, we have what we need to make that scene work or that shot work. You know, it's not just about the director. You know, I'm there for the director to make sure that he or she gets what they need at the end of the day so that when they go to the editing room, they can cut it all together. They can see what they like. You know, the editor will put an assembly, but they'll say, oh, no, I prefer take three from this scene, whatever. And so they can go in there and say, hey, you know, I remember this take and I remember this performance and I think I like that one better than this one, you know. So at the end of the day, it is for the director, but I'm not there to tell them what to do or what not to do. I'm just there to help them, support them, because film is a collaboration and we're all working together to make the vision.
Amen. That's a very good point, because we were talking about how you treat people in this business.
Yes.
Listen, listeners, yes, this is very important. Yes. How you treat people in this business can either damn your name or bring you up the ranks. For example, Emily has to be compassionate, especially when a director or an editor or an actor is having a bad day and they may not treat her very well. And I'm pretty sure they're treating you somewhat great and some not. Let's be honest, right?
Of course, everyone.
But like you were saying earlier, all behind the scenes, guys, get all the behind the scenes stuff, because we were talking about this. It was juicy. Anyway, ultimately, that can ensure your job in the future, right?
Possibly, yeah. Very possible.
Or ruin your name.
Oh, absolutely.
Presently.
Yeah.
So treat everyone. Does it matter if it's a PA? Is it assistant director? Because that assistant director could become a producer one day, or a major name, or a major actor. So the person that you brushed off because you thought they weren't good enough for you, right, can be your boss.
That's right. I've seen it happen.
So treat people with civility and treat them with respect and honor.
Absolutely.
Now,
always, about, not just for a job, but just in general, we should all be kind to each other.
Now, I know there's a name out there for script supervisors that sometimes is offensive to people and sometimes it's not. I'm calling it to script tea or not the script tea. Now, are you a pro script tea? Would you like to be called that for the rest of the segment or say, no, that's derogatory. I don't like that. Come on, Emily. Tell the truth.
I will be honest. I really don't care. But I know that some people do. And some people do find it highly offensive.
Why, though?
Because it diminutizes people, you know? Like it
diminishes people.
It also makes you feel like you're not as important, you know? And I get that.
Yeah.
Don't have much ego. So actually, my email address is Emily Scripty.
Wow. Okay.
So
Emily Scripty with a Y.
Yeah, scripty is the way. It doesn't bother me. And I've had directors flat out say, do not call her scripty. She is a script supervisor. You call her by script supervisor or her name.
So this is a really touchy subject in the industry. I had no idea.
Wow, yes.
So is there a scenario where you could say that someone kind of use it in derogatory term? Like, scripty, go get me my kind of thing. Have you ever seen something like that in person?
Not towards me. I mean, yeah. I've had people give
or
me,
seen someone.
To, yeah, not towards anyone else. But I mean, I've had people give me attitudes and not.
And
you
use
know,
the word scripty like, yeah.
No,
you,
no. Just in general, like, you know, the they've seen us as not as important.
Yeah.
You know, normally, like when we're on set, I will work with the director of photography and the first AD. And we'll get together and talk about things. But I have been left out before because they just don't want to include me for some reason.
Why do they want to include you? Wait a minute. Why?
You know, some people work together and they've worked together a lot. And then they are just in their own little bubble and they don't want to include people.
Click.
And they don't realize.
Click, basically.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Clicks. It click. Okay.
Very much so. Yeah.
We're very honest in this podcast. Don't get me wrong. We're very respectful and honorable. So when people go out there in the real world, they know exactly what to confront.
Yes.
So it is
it
a
does,
click.
It
and
does
Hollywood
happen.
Is a click. Let's be honest. Some people or certain directors and actors, they only work with each other. And it's like this tight fist. And people sometimes, I'll be honest with you, I mean, not myself, but I've seen people like do very non-honorable things just to get inside that clique. I hope, I know that you're a woman of honor, so I appreciate that. No, seriously. And the reason why they probably continue to hire you is because you're so good at your job that they have no other choice but to hire you.
Oh, that's very kind. Thank you for saying that. I think it's important not to just, I mean, it is extremely important to do your job well, obviously, but also to be, you're going to spend 12, 14, 16 hour days with somebody. It's good that you know how to read a room and that you're easy and go with the flow. You know, you can get along with people.
I.e. don't be a diva or devo.
Yes, don't be a jerk. No one wants to work with a jerk.
And with that, please stay tuned as we talk to the interwoven queen of script supervising. I know. I'm going to bless you all the whole hour. I'm sorry. Miss Emily Pendez, as we talk about one of the most serious topics that we've spoken about on this podcast ever, morality in Hollywood. How far would you go to reach your dream? And will you sell your soul for fame and fortune at the right price? Welcome to Tell Your Story. It is a masterclass hands-on workshop that is presented by Cine Video Tech and brought to you by Paradoxical Films. You will learn how to work with actual film, 16mm, Super 16mm, 35mm, and film cameras. In addition, how to load them and change magazines. Furthermore, the workshop will prepare you on how and what it takes to work on set as a first or second assistant camera, the fundamentals of lighting, and the pathway to become a director of photography. For information about the classes and updates, join us next year. Everything will be posted on our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/tell-your-story. Okay, family, we are back with the virtuoso of script supervising. I know another name, the name your lovely position, Miss Emily Pendez. All right, let's get right into it, guys. As a script supervisor, you navigate between the world of the director, the creator of the work, and the talent on set. And I'm sure you've come across various scripts with topics that you deemed morally questionable or, in your opinion, flat out wrong, right? But in the heat of the moment, a director or talent has a choice to either continue with the work against their own conscience or give in to peer pressure in the moment. I don't know how many times that either happened to me or I've seen it happen to so many people. Where you're already doing it, you're already on set, you're like, oh, I don't want to say no in front of all these people, but you know morally in your heart it's not correct, you know, that kind of moment. So my question to you is, have you ever seen anyone compromise their morals for a paycheck?
Probably. I can't specify any one event or person.
Okay.
But, you know, if an actor or actress has a problem with the script, it's usually dealt with beforehand, you know?
Because, you know, sometimes they throw things at you on the moment.
Yeah. Sometimes they do, especially on TV. You know, they'll have rewrites the night before, and the actors will get the pages, you know, the day of as they're walking into the trailer, the makeup trailer. And then, you know, they'll have discussions on set, which will take a while. And, you know, and that's between them and the director. I've never seen it for me. I mean, like, you know, I either do it or I don't.
I'll be really honest, because I would have loved to have a script supervisor on set before I had done something.
There is power in the sense that if they're not following the storyline, I could bring up, by the way, in the previous scene, and I've had actors completely just call me out. What was I doing in the scene before? How was I? You know, was I upset? Was I nervous? Was I, you know, which take did they like?
And you have to be on top of
that. And you have to know where they're always, when you walk on set that, you know, in the morning and you're prepared, you have your call sheet, you have all your pages out, all the stuff. You have to know for each scene where you're coming from, where they're going. Okay. So that the continuity of their actions and their emotions and the storyline are all in sync. Because if they were crying, you know, in the scene before, and now they're just bouncing off the walls and they're super happy about something, and you're like, well, that doesn't really continue the flow of emotion, unless they're bipolar or something, you know, that happens. But that is not part of the storyline. And you're thinking, well, it doesn't match with what we've shot before. So do we, you know, and I'll bring it up, you know, to the director. I'll bring it up unless the actor has asked me specifically. I'll ask the director, is it your intention? Do we want this emotion? Do we want, you know, is that cool? If they're fine with it, I'm fine with it. When it boils down to it, it's their story. It's their vision. I'm only there to help it make it happen.
Like Geppetto to Pinocchio. I'm telling you, I know she was blushing early and of course calling her the master hand of script writing, but I mean, script supervising, but you really are. Again, I think there's a lot of behind the scenes positions that people don't give enough shine to, like we were talking about on the break, that people only flock to the director or the actor and the Oscar award winning blah, 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 blah. But they don't realize there are hundreds of positions that are just as essential to the film. And it's not just those two people.
Definitely.
And that's the reason why we have different people in different positions in this business.
God, yes, I would hope so.
And guess what? Some of these directors, I mean, I've worked under them. They do incite and violence in front of you. And sometimes the way they speak to you can be none. So you as the script supervisor have to keep your cool.
Oh, 100%.
In all of these situations.
Yes.
Have you ever felt like super pressured by that where you're like, all right, I got to go to your room and cry a little bit because this is a bit too much and everyone's asking. What a time that you felt that way. You felt overwhelmed by it.
I can't say nothing comes to mind, but I'm not necessarily feeling pressured by a director. Well, actually, a long time before I started working on commercials, I had only done television and film. No, but this was a good learning moment. I was doing a commercial for the first time, and timing a commercial and timing a scene for either television or a feature film is a little bit different. They're more interested in the dialogue only. They might have a little bit of the action in a commercial, but whereas in a feature television, they want the whole scene. They want the whole shot, the whole action of the take. So, but for a commercial, it's just a snippet. And so I was letting my stopwatch time the hole from action to cut. And the director was furious at me. He was screaming at me, why are you telling me this, you know, timing when it should be just 2 seconds?
And I was it in front of everybody?
100%.
No.
100%.
No.
Yelling at the top of it. He was not a very nice man. He was very mean. He was always yelling at people. And so,
as some bosses are. But anyway.
I was upset and I didn't understand and I didn't know. And he told me how to do my job. he explained in a very not so nice way. He just wanted to know how long the dialogue was. And it was like, okay, I got it. And so we had to continue. Yeah, we had to continue. And so I think at the end of the night, it was a long day, you know, obviously, I got into my car and all the pressure just came out and I was crying in my car and I called up one of my friends and I was like, I'm never going to work again. I'm never going to work in this town.
Look, we've all had those moments at any position, right? See, that's the beautiful thing about this podcast. We're very honest and real about real emotions here. Mm-hmm. How did you come back the next day?
Well, I mean, you know, I shook it off. And I attributed it to a learning moment, a learning experience. And because I had other, you know, previous experiences with other people, with other directors who were not like that. And I vowed to never work with that person again, which to this day I have never worked with. I can't even tell you their name. It was so long ago. But it was a learning experience. Yeah. And I just had to brush myself off and get back to work. You know, in this business, you have to have thick skin. You have to love what you're doing. If not, it's going to eat you up because we have horrible long hours. Sometimes we have to travel. We don't see our families for days, weeks, months.
Months?
Yeah.
Wait a minute. So you can have like a baby and a family at home. And sometimes because of travel restrictions, you can't see them, physically see them for like a month or two?
Correct.
Wow.
Yes. Yes.
So you really are sacrificing.
Yeah, you're sacrificing. I know a lot of people that have sacrificed their marriages, their relationships.
Their marriages? Yes. To stay in the positions that they're in.
Yeah, because their partners don't understand the hours that we keep, the passion that we have for the
So basically craft. They could be like a scene, right? That can, you know, it can start in the morning and then end it at midnight. And then you have to go onto set at 6 o'clock in the morning, that kind of stuff. Or scenes in the day for a movie.
We have turnaround. We do get to go home and go to sleep.
Okay.
But, you know, we have long days. We have 12, 14, 16 hour days. And depending on where the set is, you know, you might live an hour away from set. So you'll get up in the morning at 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning to be on set by 7 o'clock. And you don't get home until maybe 10 p.m. You know, they're long days. They're very long days. So if, like I said, if you don't have that passion, that drive to be in this business, it can eat you up. Because there were times when I didn't see my family for months and months, you know, and I would tell not my immediate family, because I would see them on the weekends, you know, in a super haze of just delirium. But like, you know, my parents or my other family members, I wouldn't see them. I'd tell them I'm on a show. It's 8 months long. I'll see you in the fall, you know, because as a script supervisor, if you're on a television show, a lot of times, you know, you'll work Monday through Friday. But on Saturdays, we're also prepping for the next episode. We'll get pages and we're constantly, constantly going through revisions or the next episode and, prepping for the next week, breaking down new scripts, sending out all of our reports because I do continuity reports, continuity breakdowns, all kinds of timelines and things like that for each episode. So my only day off would be, you know, Sundays, and then you're just exhausted and all you want to do is, you know, spend time with your loved one.
Well, I hope after hearing Emily's story, that people, when you see a movie or a commercial the next time, you don't just brush it off and say, I've watched it already. Realize that people have sacrificed months, sometimes years of their life just to make that work.
Yes.
And that's why it's an honor to have you in the studio. Seriously. Has there anything or any script that you've received where you're like, I'm not going with this subject matter. This is immorally reprehensible. I'm not working on this. I'm done.
No.
Or do you kind of just see it as a job, like, well, I just work on what they give me and you move forward?
Fortunately, I have not been given anything too horrific or too controversial.
Because I hate to bring this up, but it's the reality of this business. Have you ever seen an actor? Have you ever seen a director, a script supervisor, where you realize that they kind of sold out a little bit?
No, I've never seen that. Not, I mean, I don't get that close to people that I would know if they were selling their souls or, you know, selling out for anything. I've never had anyone say that to me. Oh, I can't believe I'm doing this.
All right. I say scripty yes to that. And with that, stay tuned as we dive further into the mind of, listen, there's another name. I'm just going to, the wizard. She's like blushing everyone in the studio. Of script supervising Miss Emily Pendas. We would like to take a moment to thank our partners who helped make this podcast possible. Cine Video Tech has been providing film equipment, training, and services to the film industry both inside and outside the U.S. since 1968. M2 Films, which provides directing, writing, and assistant director services. And ComTV offers consulting and production services for a wide range of entertainment, marketing, advertising, and commercial projects. We are back with the specialist of script supervising, Emily Pendas. Now, we would have a beautiful behind-the-scenes conversation, guys. I even told him, please press the button and record this. So, can you explain exactly what you were explaining to me? As a script supervisor, you don't tell the director or the actor what to do, but you keep a record of it.
I keep notes on what they did throughout the scene, throughout the shot. You know, if they had a cup in their right hand or left hand, if they sat down on a certain line, you know, a lot of times the actors will ask me, when did I get up? You know, which line did I, when did I cross? You know, things like that. And I won't tell the director what to do, but I will say, hey, we did this before, you know, would you like to repeat that or do you want to keep it fresh? You know, I'll never tell them what to do. And I don't tell actors what to do. I'll tell them, you know, if they ask me, I'll tell them nicely.
So basically you like keep records of exactly what the actor and the director tells you to do and exactly what they need to do.
I don't tell them how to act or whatever. No, I'll like tell them the lines. I'll remind them nicely. I don't direct them.
And that's why you needed to have the details.
Yes, you need to keep good notes and you need to have good observational skills and you need to have a good memory too. But I do, a lot of my scripts, when you look at them, they're a mess. Chicken scratch, lots of hieroglyphs, because I my own little notes of when they stood up, if they had their hands on their hips, if, you know, where their purse was or their briefcase, you know, so that way we can match for the next.
Do you even write down the inflections of an actor? Like the person said it like this? Or is that kind of like too detailed? Is it really more what visually they see and what's coming out of their mouth? Like how detailed is detail? I want to know exactly, like, you put your hand here and you said it with a lilt at the end. Or you made it a question. That kind of stuff.
Sometimes. It depends. Yeah. Sometimes.
How do you retain all that?
I write a lot of notes.
Goodness. I can't remember for... I can't. I'm a very good script learner, so I'm not saying that. But, you know, sometimes remembering lines can be, like, the most daunting thing for an actor to do because it comes from the mind completely. And, you know, we never get exactly what's written on the paper. You might add a the or a with or to make it more natural to your speech, but you literally have to catch all of those small detail nuances where 99% of the population will completely glaze over.
Yes, because sometimes you might add a word and it changes the meaning of what you're trying to get across.
Oh, that's so true.
And so a lot of times, you know, in the beginning, when I talk to a director, I'll say, how much do you want to stay with the script? Do you want ad libs? Do you want them to be word for word? Or can they go off a little bit? You know, and it's up to the director to say, no, I want them word for word.
Wow.
You know,
have you got directors that are very taskmaster that way?
Yes, of course.
Literally word for word.
Yes, word.
And they won't continue the scene until the actor gets exactly what they said
Correct.
The first time.
Yes. There are some directors that are very well known for that.
Oh, we won't name them on this podcast unless she's very, unless you're comfortable with that. We don't have to, but.
No, but there's, you know, a lot of times if it's just an A or a the or whatever, they don't care most of the time. But there are certain directors that want a certain cadence or a certain, like you said, lilt or whatever, to how they speak, how they want this character or this actor to say the certain line, you know? A lot of times directors, you know, will just let the actors find it.
Now, we're going to talk about one of your favorite projects that you work on.
Okay.
Now, I want to say correctly, The Last Days of...
Ptolemy Gray. Yes.
What was it like working on such a profound film? Now, for those who don't know, the main protagonist, Ptolemy Gray, is on the brink of sinking into dementia, but experiences a shift when given the opportunity to briefly regain his memories and uses this fleeting lucidity to solve his nephew's death and come to terms with his past. What was it like working on something that profound?
There were a lot of emotions because the subject matter was so actually very close to my heart, dealing with family members that have gone through that. It was also the possibility of that happening, you know, what would you do? What would somebody do? It was very interesting to me. The fact that I got to work with Samuel Jackson, that was amazing.
You work with the Samuel L. Jackson.
He's the main star and the producer. He tried to get this done a long time. It took him a long time to get this done. And it was just a beautiful story. We had an amazing cast. The crew was fantastic. It got crazy because, you know, we had to have second units and there was just days that just went into nights. But there, at one point, we had a special counsel. We were talking about this earlier about difficulty of working on sets like Schindler's List.
Did this kind of mirror that with the emotion?
Yeah, it did. And so not to give away anything in case of our...
No,
of listeners.
Course. Whatever you can.
But there were some subject matters that were really, really difficult. There were times when I would come back to my car at the end of the day and I would just be like, I need to decompress. What I just watched was, you know, amazing, but really, really, really just awful.
If you're able to speak about it, what were the other things that in the movie that touched your heart that way? They were challenging. Just subject matters.
Well, I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
Yeah, like you said, there's certain subject matters that really hit home for you. Other than dementia, was there anything else that hit home for you in that movie?
Relationships. Yeah, the relationship between Ptolemy Gray and his caregiver. You know, it was beautiful to see that. And I think I went off track. I was saying that we had a counselor earlier. We had a counselor come to set. So if anyone had any difficulties, they could go to the counselor and talk to them, which I thought was so amazing of our producer to bring on to set, our executive producer, Diane Housland. She's amazing.
So the subject matter was that heavy. They needed a counselor to be able to counsel you on set.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my goodness.
It was very heavy. Yes. And that was things that happened that as a little boy, Ptolemy Gray witnessed. And it was.
What were some of the things that he witnessed or one thing you can say?
Well, it was the lynching of his. Yeah.
Even that word lynch.
Yeah. Of his mentor, of his person that he looked up to and helped him. And those scenes that, you know, Ptolemy fighting his demons and going through all his emotions and stuff and just seeing how helpless he was sometimes. And
yeah, because dementia basically, it debilitates you.
Yeah, those scenes were just so hard. And I think Samuel should have won so many awards for that because he was just so brilliant. His performance was so brilliant. And we had, like I said, amazing cast of characters and just amazing actors. But he just, there were times when I said, you just made me cry, Sam, you just made me cry.
Now, it's a very good point that you're bringing up. Just because it didn't win an award doesn't mean that it doesn't have the merit that it deserves.
Oh,
I think
people, don't
get me wrong, everybody wants an award. Everybody wants to be awarded.
Yes,
I get it.
Yes.
But I think people concentrate too much on the award system.
Yes,
here,
that's so true.
Which is basically based on popularity, let's be honest, right?
Of course.
Sometimes it's not even the merit of the work itself.
Yes.
But Ptolemy Gray will always be in film forever, touching the millions of lives and who knows what cultures, especially people dealing with dementia. I'll be honest with you, I dealt with dementia personally myself. My father had dementia, so I understand. So seeing that could influence me for years to come, if not how I approach anyone with dementia or anyone with any traumatic experiences. And that's the award. I think that's exactly what people should concentrate on versus, I wonder if this is going to be accepted by whatever. I want it to be an honest portrayal of an event or an honest portrayal of an emotion that I would like to proclaim to the audience, something that they can take for the rest of their life.
It's a beautiful story. I mean, it was a miniseries. I think it was only 6 episodes, something like that. I just want people to see it, acknowledge it, and just witness the beautiful story. And because it still resonates, obviously. You know, I think there's some, I don't know if it's a pill or injection or something, they're still talking about trying to help alleviate, if not cure, dementia. I don't think they'll ever be able to find a cure, but
you never
to
know,
but, help, yeah. You know, with the symptoms and all that. And it's just really difficult thing for not just the person who's going through it, but for the families and all that.
But the film did its job. It brought awareness.
Yes, of course.
Period.
Course. Yes.
How did it challenge you as a script supervisor?
Well, see, my job is the same on every set, but it's different at the same time because you're dealing with different actors, you're dealing with different directors, you're dealing with different subject matter. You know, it's my job is always the same across the board. I do the same thing every time. But it's how I deal with things or people that always is different, you know? For instance, Samuel and I, he would ask me questions. Like I said, actors ask me, where am I coming from? What was that? Where was I going to? You know, and we had good relationship that he would come to me and ask me these things, you know? Whereas some actors, they do their own work and they, you know, they do their own thing, which is totally fine because that works for them. But, you know, we had a relationship that I can talk to him about things, and that was great. That helped me because it's one less step that I need to do.
One less hurdle.
If I see something that didn't match up with the previous, you know, scene, I would have to say to the director, you know, this isn't really. And then the director would have to go and talk to the actor. And then, you know, and it was just like one more thing to do. So having that relationship with him was great because I can talk to him and, you know.
Is there any change? Because sometimes you say there's serious subject matter and then sometimes it could be, you know, fantasy, right? So you're saying that as a script supervisor, you are non-biased. You just take the script as is, almost like a surgeon, right? Here it is. I take the notes, I take the records, and I speak to who I have to speak to.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that I would do different is, you know, how I would prepare myself for that.
Yeah, how
would
you
prepare? For those days and for you know, the subject matter. I just have to, you know, realize and be respectful to the scene and the actors who are involved in that scene because they are not the ones doing these horrific things in the scene. It's their character, you know. You have to be, when we're doing certain scenes that are difficult for people, we have to be respectful and mindful that, yes, we're watching and we're taking our notes and we're writing these things down. But there are people that are play acting what's happening. So we just, you know, have to respect that. And remember that these people, actors, actresses, are people, you know, and just be mindful of that. And they're doing their own research and they're going to have their own time that they have to prepare for that and decompress.
I ask because I think people sometimes forget. They don't know how to dissimulate the actor versus the actual person. And they tend to put them in the same box. Oh, you played a bad guy. You played this. So there must be a part of you that is that. Yeah. It's like, no, that's what the work is for. Right. And we take it with honor and integrity. And once the work is over, you separate. But you know how it is in this world of film industry. I mean, to the average person, they don't know how to dissimulate. And so they villainize, right? Or demonize certain people. Or they put people on pedestals that they don't deserve to be on, thinking that they are these people. It's right. Like, no, it's film.
We're just playing a character.
Right? Egg.
Yeah. So I, you know, when I, if I'm reading, I worked on the Florida Project and it was a very hard job. A lot of people know it. I've been told, oh, I love that movie, whatever. And I just think that was one of the hardest jobs that I worked on. Mm-hmm. And it had to do a lot with the subject matter, you know, homelessness. We shot in a hotel where there were homeless people living, families. And
real
whatnot.
Homeless people.
Yes, real. And we had one of the children was homeless. And, you know, it was so difficult to be on that set because you knew what was around you, you know. And at the end of we were shooting in Orlando in the middle of the summer. We're shooting in asphalt. We're shooting in these, you know, it's a low budget in the all these, you know, conditions of that. That's, you know, in its own difficult sometimes, but then you're dealing with this subject matter that is really hard and it's really difficult to, you know, I was missing my family. I hadn't seen them in a while and I would be really sad and depressed a little at the end of the day because you would come from this set of where you know that there's six people living in this room, you know, and you just want to go home and hug your child and then, oh, wait, I can't because she's back in Miami, you know?
And then you realize how important the film work that you're in really impacts and matters to a generation of people.
Well, it opens their eyes. I mean, if you loved the Florida Project, you know, I would hope that people would help out the homeless.
Oh, Emily, master hand of script supervisor. Making me cry here.
Oh, I'm telling.
No, seriously. And with that, I don't know what to say. Stay tuned to our final segment, please, as we talk about the future for Emily Pendus. What her future practices are, because I mean, she already did the Florida Project. She did Ptolemy Gray. I mean, what else? Must be an Oscar winning movie. I already call it. I call it.
Yes.
See you guys in a bit. If you enjoy listening to our podcast, and we hope that you do, we hope, right? Support us by subscribing to your favorite podcast platform and giving us a rating. Then head to our online store at www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com/shop, where you can purchase Cinema Pathway gear, including t-shirts, hoodies, stickers, and more. Also, don't forget, follow us on Instagram at cinema_pathway_podcast. Again, that's cinema_pathway_podcast for all the behind the scenes photos and more. Welcome back, my film family, and we are with the prodigal of script supervising, Miss Emily Pendus. And guys, she's been blushing this entire time because she's like,
I can't
what
believe
are
you
these
said that
names?
With a straight face.
Because I mean it. Because you are. Now, okay. What is in the future for Emily Pendus? Like, where can people reach you? What kind of films, what kind of projects would you love to do?
Oh, good question. Yeah. Well, they can find me on IMDb, on Instagram.
Okay. Under Emily Pendus?
Under Emily Pendus, yeah.
EmilyPendas.
Yes, that's me.
EmilyPendas, Emily Pendus.
Oh my goodness.
So what kind of project would you, what is your, like a dream project you want to work on? So if Hollywood director were listening to, which they are.
Okay.
Listening to this podcast, you want them to contact you for?
I just like projects with real people, you know. I do like fantasy and science fiction and stuff, but I like interesting stories.
Yeah.
You know? I like interesting stories.
What kind of stories would you, what is a dream project you want to work on?
I
dream director said, I want this person and this person.
I would love to work with the Coen brothers. That would be amazing.
Oh, yeah. You hear this, Coen brothers.
I would love to work with. There's a film that keeps popping up in my head that I have to, that I need to watch again. And it was Atonement. I don't know if you've seen that one. It's such a beautiful movie. Just
yes.
Heartbreaking, gut wrenching, just amazing performances and very dramatic. But yeah, that's it. I wouldn't mind working on something like that. That would be really cool.
Something with some grit.
Yeah.
I know you like fantasy. What kind of fantasy works do you want to work on?
Well, I mean, like fantasy sci-fi, you know, any kind of like Star Wars kind of thing.
Oh, we have a Star Wars fan in the building. Yeah, okay.
Like Star Wars.
Out of all the franchises or all the iterations of Star Wars, which is the one you feel like you could have contributed the most to as a script supervisor? Oh, you're going to get the questions today, man.
No, I'm not that big of a Star Wars fan. You know, maybe Lord of the Rings. I would have loved to have worked on Lord of the Rings. That would be amazing.
Hey, you know, Lord of the Rings 5, 6, 7, 8.
That would be so cool.
Call Miss Emily Pendas. Now, oftentimes the script supervisor is seen as an editor or the writer's representative on set. I don't know if you've heard that. I've heard it from others before.
Yes.
How has this played out in your position? And does this statement ring completely true?
Well, yes, in a sense it does, because I'm taking all the notes for the editors. You know, if there's not a writer on set, you know, they will ask me, what is this scene about? What is happening in this scene and what's going, you know, that kind of sense. But I'm not writing the scenes. Yeah. And if we're rewriting, it's usually the director, producer, writer gets involved with that. But yeah, I try and get as much information as I can possibly get, as detailed as I can for the editor. I'm taking notes for the editor. I'm taking notes for the director. I'm taking notes for myself. I'm taking notes for the producer. All of my notes go to the office at the end of the day. They go to the post at the end of the day, and sometimes to the director or the director's assistant. So a lot of people are looking at my notes, you know, executives, things like that.
So you're an essential, vital role to the movie itself.
Yeah.
Now, I know the script supervisor hasn't been around forever, right? This is something that was made
when the talkies started, I believe, is when
they started came up with
bringing,
that role.
Yeah, they started bringing someone onto set to take down notes. They, from what I remember hearing or reading about, they had grabbed a woman from one of the offices upstairs of the studio, and they brought her on to take notes as to what was going on. And from then, it just kind of morphed into what our position is today. Yeah.
Thank you. Are you ready for the hot seat? This is a segment of the show that, you know, there's a 100-degree question, 150-degree question, and then a 200-degree question about controversial issues or subjects in the industry. Are you ready, Miss Emily Pendas, script supervisor to the stars? Dun, dun, dun.
Yes.
You know, we don't have any, any ad-libs, so I'm ad-libbing with my mouth. Dun, dun, dun.
Right.
Have you ever seen a war break out between an actor or director on set over pride and ego? And have you ever had to mediate between the two?
Yes and no.
Okay. Can you spill a little juice on that? You don't have to say the names of what happened, you know, to the people on set, you know. What was the fight about? You know, this is a drama section of our podcast.
It was a difference of opinions.
What was the opinion?
I can't recall.
Ooh, it was that kind of juicy opinion, guys.
No, I would never get involved.
Fair.
That's not
fair.
I'm not here for that.
I will leave it for the viewer or the listener to formulate that fantasy in your brain. Number two, dun, 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 past or present, if you could sue any companies that have
sued.
Okay. Any companies that maybe have worked you too hard or a fellow colleague too hard, would you? And what would you ask for?
No, I've never thought about it, but I would always say, I would always think about we need more turnaround time. That's something that I would vote for.
So definitely. You would ask for money?
Well, yes, fair wages, obviously. Camera bumps need to be changed from one camera because we're using so many different cameras now. It's become almost standard that we use two cameras on everything, three cameras. If you've got action or any kind of like big epic stories and you have so many cameras, and then we're only getting one camera bump, we should be getting a bump for every camera that we're using. Because
wait, what's a camera bump? What do you mean?
money for each camera.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So when I write my notes, I'm writing it for every camera. So it's not just, you know, double work. It could be triple work, quadruple. I mean, however many cameras there are.
I'm writing, not getting paid for.
Information for what's on that roll or card now, you know, that happened on that shot and that scene and that take. And it's every one of those cameras I'm writing information about. And I'm not getting paid for every one of those cameras. I'm getting paid as my, you know, my regular rate. So that's what I would vote for that. I would totally vote for that. I'm not going to sue anyone over it, but... Assistance would be great. Yeah, that's something that we've been talking about recently, you know, in union meetings and stuff. I'll log on and people are talking about having an assistant. And I at first couldn't wrap my head around having another person do what I need to see everything. I need to write down everything. I need to take pictures of everything. I need to, you know, and then I started thinking, well, yes, I could foresee having an assistant help me with taking continuity pictures and then having them be solely responsible for that. Or I could have someone on book while I'm watching five different cameras and trying to follow what each camera is doing. I could have someone else on book giving actors lines. Do you know what I mean? I can see where that would be helpful and super beneficial, really. Just little things like that that would really assist me in my day. Because when it comes down to it, we're just a department of one. You know, I don't have anyone to fall back on.
And that's what people don't realize. How many different jobs you take on, just like assistant directors, PAs, they take on so many different responsibilities that are not being paid for, guys.
I mean, that's the job. That's the role. Yeah. That's what we do. But now with technology and just the stories seem to be getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And we're using a lot more cameras and a lot more footage. I mean, continuity mistakes happen because... we don't do rehearsals anymore. We do rehearsals on camera. How many times have we heard that? Oh, let's just roll. It's tape or it's card. It's digital. No one cares. Let's just roll. You know, makeup hasn't finished doing last looks. Camera's still trying to figure out their focus marks. You know, there's a water bottle on set. You know, things like that. And then... But the performance turns out really good and you wind up using that first take.
Wow, with no finished makeup, no finished nothing.
And it was a rehearsal. I always write on my notes, rehearsal, rehearsal, rehearsal. But because we're in a rush, we've got to get things going. We need to get going, you know? And sometimes that's where continuity mistakes happen, you know?
Emily, I wanted to ask you the chess question, but we'll leave it for another time.
Okay.
Chess question. I have to ask you this.
Yes.
How do you wish to be remembered?
How do I wish to be remembered?
Yeah.
Oh.
All the hard work and everything you sacrificed in your life. Because this is serious. A lot of people think it's just a joke, but it's serious because you're sacrificing your energy. And, you know, we never know how long we're on this earth. You never know. How do you personally, Emily Pendas, wish to be remembered?
Gee, I've never been asked that question. That's a good question. I don't actually think I've ever thought about that. I mean...
if your children were watching this in the future and look back, what would you say? Seriously.
I would like for her to know or to realize or remember me as being a joyful person, as being a hard worker, an independent person, and someone who went after her goal. Yeah. Who overcame a lot of difficulties and reached her goal. Even when people said, no, you can't do that. You're not going to be able to do that. No, you can't do that. I persevered, even with yelling directors. I was able to pick myself up, brush myself off, and get back in the game.
If you had to sum up all of your works thus far in one word. I know, because it's hard to come up with one word, but what would that be?
Oh my goodness.
If you had to sum up all of your works thus far, your achievements, your setbacks, the things that you've overcome in one word so far to this point in your life, what would that word be?
Interesting.
I like that. Emily Pendas is interesting. You know, this has been an interesting podcast, honestly. And as always, until the next time, family. To our listeners, thank you again for joining us in the Cinema Pathway podcast today. I'm your host, Michael Angelo Malachi. Our producer and director is the lovely Juliette Asson. and our associate producer is Victor Hugo Pereira. The executive producer and editor is Freddie R. Rodriguez. This was a presentation by Paradoxical Films. And please visit our website at www.paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's www.paradoxicalfilms.com for more information about today's podcast. And you can also email us if you like at cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com. Again, that's cinemapathway@paradoxicalfilms.com, where you can send all comments, suggestions for all future episodes. Lights out!